I'm here in Trillick and I'm talking to Joe Mills and his wife Eileen. Eileen, your maiden name was Knox, and you came not too far from here either, just up the road.
Yes.
What was the name of the townsland again?
Mullinroddy, Mullinroddy, Edirne.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when did you meet and get married? Can you remember? Well, it would be... What year did you get married?
1976, and we have one son, Jonathan.
Okay.
Yes.
And you've always had a business here, have you, Joe?
Yes, I worked with my father here as a partner in the business, and then eventually took over the business, and then eventually my father died, and I'm carrying on now as a partner with my son, Jonathan.
Okay.
And Eileen.
What was your father's first name?
Andrew Mills.
And did he start the business originally?
Yes, he started the business from scratch.
From scratch?
Yes.
And built it up. And
yes.
So can you describe to me what the business is?
Well, they started off with fixing bicycles and things like that, because there was no very few motors. There's an old photograph up in the Tom Murphy's in the spar shop up the street, and it just shows one car parked on the main street in Trillick. And my father then went into the bicycle things, and during the war, he seen the war coming, and he bought as many tyres for bicycles as he could. He had tyres in every room in the house. At that stage, we lived up the street. And then he was actually supplying tyres to virtually everybody during the war, for the rubber was scarce, tyres couldn't be got for bicycles. Then they developed from there into a taxi business, and then they moved down here to this place, and then started a filling station. And once they started the filling station, then we developed on, as I got older, we developed on into the oil business, distributing oil around the countryside. And that time there was no diesel or anything like that, it was just petrol and TVO tractors.
And did you come straight into the business after you finished school?
Yes, I did.
And your brothers, were they in the business as well, or
no? They were out to work as mechanics in County Cars and in Skilling. The two of them went out, and I think they were earning something like £1.10 a week.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have took you ten a Skilling back, but that was to serve their time as apprentice. And they didn't get involved in the business much, I was there, I was interested in the business, and I'd always been, trying to develop and do things. My father would be advising me against, but every time I got his back turned, I went and ordered something that I shouldn't have ordered. But eventually I ordered six big oil tanks from Kingspan and Carrickmacross, booked a crane from McNally's in Dublin and had them down here and the old tanks, and my father said, where are these coming out? Is there some mistake? And then I said, no, I ordered them. And it's just, I don't know what,
Yeah, of course, it was the old school and the new school.
Yes, you're going to put me out of business, he says.
Yeah.
And I says, well, they're here now anyway, so, and then got them, had to hire the crane from Dublin because it's so far as Spahn to lift the tanks down in place, and it's 285 ton crane, and then I'd arranged with Kingspan and Carrickmacross to bring the tanks in so as that there's the crane there, because it was the same cost for lifting one tank in as it was for six, because they charge you 8 hours anyway, and then they charge you from coming from Dublin to here back to Dublin. So I thought, well, six tanks make more sense because it'd be the one expense, and I arranged with the tank builders in Carrickmacross to make sure that the tanks were kept flowing and not have the boys sitting in the crane idle.
Of course.
So
yep.
They come in just batches, you know what I mean? And then about a year after, then they come a scarcity in oil. I think it was maybe the Iran Iraq war or something like that. And then my father told me, and he says, wasn't it a queer idea that I told you to buy them tanks, eh? He says, we're going to be needed now.
Oh, that was lovely. So, but the thing, you both got on very well together and you ran the business together. And Eileen, were you living here beside the business then at that time? Were you living here at the time? Or
no, our home is 2.5 miles out of the village of Trillick. And I was working, and my job as a library assistant. And then when the VAT came on the oil, Joe's dad, being an elderly man, it was too much bookwork for him. So I gave up my job and came into the business.
I see.
And fortunately then I was here. I was able to keep things going when Joe was injured and keep things sort of ticking over. And that's how come I'm here, and now I have had to retire, of course, now.
But it was inside in Enniskillen, you were telling me, Enniskillen library that you were
that
working.
I worked, yes. Yeah.
And so, Joe, talk to me about that. What happened? Why were you targeted and attacked?
Well, there were several reasons. One was I was in the UDR, and the other one was that during my time in the UDR, I caught a unit of IRA men, and once they caught them and broke them up and gave evidence court, and they were put in jail for some of them 15 years, 7 years, and 8 years, terms like that. I caught 4 of them. They were making a bomb to drive till Enniskillen with it and planted it on straight in Enniskillen outside the tax office. So just happened to be that I was in Oma patrolling with my section, and in the Oma town area, and that particular night there was a raid on the deanery at Locher, which was the C Company HQ, and we were brought back into the barracks and briefed to go to Locher to help out with what was going on there. So we went there, and then we there the most of the rest of the night and all day the next day. Then I come back to St. Lucy Barracks in Oma, and they asked me then if I'd go, because I hadn't been in bed, you know, for that whole night, the whole next day. And then they asked me then, Oma, would I take a patrol till the kind of this kind of an area around here, because with all the activity, like all the police and army and everything around the Monaghan border, between Clogher and the Monaghan border, was saturated with troops trying to catch these people, because there's up to 40 of them coming to Kettleroy to raid the barracks in Clogher. And then I said okay, because I was sort of annoyed about what had happened, because Eva Martin had been shot dead at the deanery. And she was the first green flinch to be shot dead. We called them green flinches, but they were female soldiers. And then I stopped the car, and I got them out one at a time, and I found a revolver on one of them. And I knew the people in the vehicle, and they asked me what was going on, like why was I not, they were going to look for a drink, why was I being so aggressive about getting them out of the car and searching them. Sure, I knew where they were, what I was asking, where they were going or coming from, because they said she knew us and all the rest. But eventually I got 2 revolvers on them, and then later I got touch her upstream in Oma, and I told them I needed police assistance. And
hold on now, just 1 second. Sorry, okay, the tractor is gone. Keep going.
Well, then the police come from Enniskillen then, and with an army escort, because it was a dangerous area at the time, and they come and took the 3 men in the car, which were going, actually they'd been away to hijack a van or steal a van to drive the bomb to Enniskillen the next day, but there was different people around the house, and they abandoned that thing. They're moving back to where they were making the bomb.
Yeah.
And then I just intercepted them coming from that, where they were going to hijack the van. I intercepted them on the way back to where they were going, but I had a fair idea all about them, because there is the lived and everything else. But then, disrupted that unit, which was a very the units were carrying out a lot of trouble in this part of Fermanagh, and we're in Tyrone here, so they were responsible for a lot of things happening in this area around Tyrone, farther afield.
But can I ask you just when you say that you were in the UDR, you were in the UDR reserves?
Yes, part time UDR.
So you were working here and there at the same time?
Yes, well, I was often left here, once I got out of the lorry, home and stayed to Oma, and then maybe come back of duty then at 5 o'clock in the morning or something like that.
So when you took the gun and you knew the other IRA men that were planting this, that were hijacking or taking the car to do this.
Yes.
So they knew you as well, obviously.
Oh, I definitely knew.
And so did they come after you then?
Well, after that happened, there was a preliminary hearing in the Crown Court in Enniskillen. I had to go there and give evidence. Then it went into what they call the High Court in Belfast now, but at that time it was called the City Commissioners. And I had to go there and give evidence against them too. And they were all sentences in jail. And ever from that, I become a very high level target. And it tried several times to disrupt me and even ring an island at the middle of the night and one thing or another. I then was living 2 miles out of the town here.
But Eileen, did you feel very vulnerable at that time when you were, you know, after Joe had given evidence and, you know, you were outside?
The troubles, yes. Through the troubles, it was difficult being a part-time member because you had to carry on with your normal life. And I used to sit at the window till he'd come home and watch out, maybe all hours at night, because it was difficult, yes. Very difficult.
And you had a small baby in
had
the house?
A small, yes. Well, yes, Jonathan was 9 when his dad was injured.
Oh, I see.
And it's been difficult for him.
I was on the UDR from the day he was born, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But very early, I didn't get enjoying the life of growing up with him, because once I come home from UDR, put on my boiler suit out delivering oil, and my father and mother would have took the orders with no staff, and I was driving the lorry, and always going into areas. I never knew what I was going to, where I was going or what I was going to meet whenever I go to houses with oil, because I didn't know whether it was a genuine call or not.
So this went on for a long time, you know?
Over the years,
it was an income as well, you know, that he wanted to buy a place. He could have lived off his in-laws, because we had a vacant house on the farm, but he didn't want to do that. Joe was very independent. He wanted to earn the money and buy his own little place, which is where we were living and still living there. But that was also a reason, you know, to earn money, which a lot of the younger men would have done for that reason.
My father was an old timer, but he thought whenever he gave you £10 at the end of the week, that, you know, that was like £1,000 a day, you know what I mean? So he thought it had been real. And if he gave you £20, I don't think he ever gave me £20 in my life. To start, you know, and even when we were in partnership, you know, I borrow money and do this and do that and do the one, but every time there was a field for sale out the back there, and I said to my father, you know, we shouldn't let that go. And my father said, well, what do I want for that furniture? He says, I could have bought that of Jimmy Orr, he says, for £160. He says, much are they looking for it? It's like 10,000. And my father says, oh, sure, I could have got that for £160. I says, why didn't you buy it? I hadn't got £160, and he wouldn't borrow. So I just hopped the car and drove to the bank and drove over and asked if I could borrow the money. And the bank man says, this is going to have to go through Belfast, all the rest, get permission. Well, I says, if I don't buy it now, says, I'm going to miss it, because it's on the market and it's closing at 5 o'clock this evening. This is 3:15 in the evening. And he said, "Oh well, I'll tell you what I do. You know, I know you're everything's 100% right. You're not going to, you know, you're going to pay your debt and all the rest." Which is, I'll just have to do it. I'm putting it through for you now. Tell the at that stage, I had £2,000 saved up out of UDR money. And
that's what enables you to buy the piece of property.
Yes.
But being in the UDR, and I know now I talk about the attack on you in a moment, but being in the UDR, were you, your life was at risk every time you went out?
Well, you see, it's like this. There's no full-time UDR men at that stage, but there's regular army in the Snelly Barracks and Oma and everything else. But they went out, they'd done an 8-hour stint or whatever they had to do. But our duty was, if they wanted us to stay for 24 hours, they called it an army day was 24 hours. But if you weren't needed, you know, you weren't needed. So we would have usually done 8 hours or 9 hours or 10 hours, but we only got 8 hours pay no matter what we'd done.
Yeah.
But the thing was, there wasn't very much money for it, but you had to do a lot of duties to try and build up the money. But the part-time UDR man was on duty 24 hours a day, because you were a target, whether you're in uniform or whether you're in civilian clothes coming home from duty or whatever else. You were the full-time UDR man, whenever he came on, well, he was doing yard duties or something like that, but whatever he was doing, he wasn't a target all the time, because while he was in the barracks or wherever he was, you know, he was covered. But the part-time man was on duty all the time. But also, which incited maybe more so than anything else, they got so vicious then about people supplying police stations and supplying army barracks and things like that. But then I started, because of my position, and they could trust me with my security, that and then nobody would supply them. Everybody quit supplying them because they're all threatened. And I started delivering oil into police stations all over. Actually, there was some crowd from Ballymena was the last to serve oil into the courthouse in Londonderry. And they asked me, would I do it? And I said, well, we want to take the name of the lorry and all the rest if you're going to do this. I says, no. He says, we'll give you an escort in and out. I says, no, I'll go and come as I please. If you order the oil, I deliver the oil. But
God, you were a brave man, weren't you?
I'm not going to take that. I'm not taking my name of that. I'm not taking my name of the lorry, because I'm proud of my name. And the Rome and the UDR anyway, so I'm a target anyway, so it doesn't make a bit of difference to me. And I'd done Strabon Courthouse and the one in Londonderry, which had no oil for 6 weeks at one stage, because nobody would go into it, because everybody was threatened. I was threatened several times about delivering, even going to the bank at Dromore.
How did they threaten you? Was it a note that was handed in?
No. Just straight up to my face.
And you knew the person who was
I knew the person who was doing it. I used to go to the bank at Dromore. And there's a couple of people, if I got out of the car, they're more in park, walking to the bank. They come over to me and say, look, you're not allowed in the Dromore anymore. I'd say, well, I have to go to the bank, haven't I? And they said, well, you know, we'll get you. And I says, well, I don't care what you do or not, because I can be got anywhere.
But this was real intimidation then.
Yes, you know, it wasn't such a thing as, you know, well, we got phone calls in the middle of the night and everything else.
With the fire brigade?
Then one night, there was Eileen and John was away somewhere for the weekend, but I was at home on my own, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, like after my attack, I never slept for about 2 years. I used to lie out the window with a gun.
Tell me about the attack now. What happened?
Well, in the attack, I'd been out delivering oil down around the Donegal border between Fermanagh and Donegal, and I had my personal protection weapon with me, and I cocked it once to go down near the border, because I never kept around the chamber, because I was always afraid of John coming on with the lorry somewhere and maybe fitting about it and something happening. So I always kept it with no round in the breech, that if he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't harm himself or nobody else would. And I was down around the Fermanagh border, the Fermanagh, real bad area,
Where was it?
In round, I went up through Enniskillen, down the Loch Shore Road, in round Beleek, then up on the far side of Beleek, between Beleek and sort of Pettigo area. Yeah. And actually, I thought that very day that I was so lucky, because everywhere I went, there was army lorries, ready mix lorries on them and everything else. There were stunts that filled in some of the craters they made in the road. And I said to myself, this is great, I couldn't have picked a better day to come and do deliveries here. And then I come back, and while I was down there, I had radio communication in the lorries back to the office, because there were no mobile phones at the time. So I thought, this is great, you know, while I was on the way back, Eileen radio to tell me that there's a woman between Irvinstown and Drumore in the town on of Chumray that had run out of oil, and that would try and get her done the night, because it was Saturday night and she wanted to have heat over Sunday, over the weekend. So I said, there's no problem on him. If I call her down to Skerry, which is out the road, and I done that call, and then I hadn't enough oil in the lorry left to do the other call, so I come back in here, reversed in, started loading the lorry. Eileen was getting ready for home. John came around and got into the lorry beside me, and he says, I want to go with you now. He says, for a run. And me and him had got a scar about a week before down on at the border, whenever I used to meet men from Ballyshannon, were getting oil filled in an out farm, and it was in the north, just thrown one field from the border. And I thought they would meet me there to pay me and all the rest. I thought they landed on the yard, that there was something odd going on. So I said to John, now, if anything happens, so you stay out of the road, if anything happens, you run out that lane there and say, turn left, say, at that first house to the right. Actually, it pointed out to me on my way down into it, because I had a big long lane, about a mile long, in to cross the edge of the border, opposite Lathacran Chapel. And there's nobody there, so the next thing I seen two men come walking up the field, so I told John to run and go to the house where I told him that I used people wouldn't harm, you know. So I got my gun ready, and I was just sitting waiting on the two boys coming up the field. I thought they were just coming for me, but whenever they're riding, I'd never met the men in my life before, because they just ordered the oil up, and because it was cheaper in the north than it was in the south. So, but there, I wasn't breaking the law, because it was delivered in the north, and they probably were, whatever they done with after that, that was their own business. But whenever they come up anyway, they come up and they said, have you the oil in? I hadn't put the oil off, of course, till I got the money. And but I thought it was a come on, and I chatted the men, they paid me, and out the lane, collected Jonathan at the house at the end of the lane again. And I think whenever he got the lorry that night with me, whenever I come back in to reload to go out to do this call, that he thought of that, and he jumped out of the lorry and he said, no, I'm going home, Mummy. And I says, what's wrong? Well, he says, you know, are you going near the border? I says, not really, I'm only going down the road a bit. But no, I says, I'm going home, Mummy. This is 9 o'clock at night, roughly. And I finished loading the lorry anyhow, and then I just remembered I bought two steaks in Ballymullard going through earlier in the day, and I remember I had them sitting on the passenger seat of the lorry, and I drove out the road. And normally I'd have went the good road down into the Drumore and up there main Irvinstown Road, but I cut across country because my house was on pod if I went the back roads.
Yes.
So I went that road anyway, and I stopped the lorry at the end of my own avenue, because Eileen has an arch over the end of the avenue that you can't get the lorry through, you have to wear them around back lane in. And I stopped the lorry there and I put on the roof light, and I turned my head like that to lift the stakes of the passenger seat, and just with that one round, just I could find the heat of it going past my face, but only for the stakes, it would be straight through there. And then I immediately dived for the passenger side, and as I was diving for the passenger side, that gunman on the right hand side, the driving side of the lorry, he put it on automatic and he just went full blast at me, and the whole thing went up my back, it more or less didn't go through me back. It scoped up the whole back, the bullets, and there was a force of it. It actually blew me right over, and it landed on the passenger side, my 2 feet up in the air like that. And then I got my pistol out, and with not thinking about being down on the board there earlier in the day, I went to cock it, because I never carried around in it. And I went to cock it because, only in dangerous spots that I would have left one in the chamber, and I wouldn't have brought John with me anywhere I was going that I thought was really dangerous. And then the next thing I said to myself, this is great now, and I said to myself, now the way I was very active. I was I was around about 40 over 40 years of age, but I was at my fittest. So I was lying with my 2 feet up in the air like that on my back on the passenger's floor, and I said to myself, now I'll just push this passenger door open and I'll just do a cartwheel like that out and land on my feet and away like hell down the side of the lorry. And as soon as I pushed that door open, there was another gunman behind a tree at the end of my avenue
on the lawn,
and he seen the, with the roof light being on, the inside of the cab of the lorry was lit up, so he could see perfectly well. It was just about dusk at the time, but I could see very little. I hadn't time to look around me to see very much anyway, because there was too much in my mind. But he fired at me, and he put a bullet straight through that foot there, but it broke every sinew, and seemingly your foot, there's more engineering in your foot than any other part of your body, because it's all sinews and nerve ends and things like that. So then I had to abandon that plan, so I said, to hell with this. You won't lie here till they come in, drag you out of the lorry and finish you off, or take you away and torture you.
Yeah.
So I decided then that I just forced them to kill me. It was the only way that I wasn't going to be tortured. So I got up on top of the engine between the two seats, and I went to fire back, and then another gunman came down the middle of the road, and he was just spraying the windscreen of the lorry right, left and centre, and the bullets were just whizzing through past me. And fortunately at that time no one hit me. But then I said, right, the other gunman was still, there's three gunmen around me like a horseshoe, so the other gunman was on the right hand side of the lorry that fired the first shots. And I said, to hell, now I'll jump straight at him. And I kind of roughly had an idea, there's a gate opposite my avenue, I had a rough idea that he was somewhere, because I could hear a gate rattling at the very start, because I always drive about with the drive one day down, so as that I could keep my ears open, and listen.
Of course.
And hail, rain or snow, that driving one day was always down. But I just said, right, I'm going now, I have no other choice. And I just pushed the driving door open like that, and I jumped, and I still had the pistol in my hand, and I landed on the road, and I was that badly injured between my back and my foot that as soon as I hit the road, I went down just flat like a pancake on the road. And at that stage then, he opened fire at me, just straight at me. And but with me going down so quick, I must have mesmerised him, or I scared him or something. He must have thought, to hell, this man, it must be SAS or something. I think I might have even shouted SAS ambush or something like that.
Yeah,
I think I did that. But whatever done, I started it between jumping straight at him and everything else. But the door was swinging about it, I think, like that there. But he just kept firing at the door and firing at the open entrance through the cab of the lorry, that way there.
Yeah.
And then there's a ladder in the street of an oil tanker to climb up on the top to load them. So I caught the ladder to pull myself up. And when just I was the door open, but it was, once you seen the door opening, he fired straight at me.
Yeah.
But I went out that, whenever I jumped, I went out that quick that, and I think whenever I shouted and jumped straight at him, he wasn't any more than 12 foot off me. I really mesmerized. He didn't know what was going on. I wanted to make sure that he would pump to me right, left and centre. I wanted to die. I didn't give a dang. I said, to hell, you're not taking me anyway. That was my thoughts. Because I didn't want to be taken away, or like I wanted to get it over and done with, just, because there's no use in trying to beat about the bush.
So what happened?
Well, then as I dived out, as I say, I go down, I lay on the road, and then I left the pistol down then. This ladder on the side of the door, so the only way I could get, I got my hand on the ladder trying to pull myself up, and as I was trying to pull myself up, he noticed, he then realised that I was on the road, so he started blasting the kale, the sparks and everything was jumping around me. He actually cut the two boots nearly off my feet, skimming them, just skimming them. There was tracks through the boots everywhere, but nothing really, I don't know what happened to him, but he just didn't make a good job out of it. But
you went down the road
there. That was all right then. The next thing, whatever I did get up, I made it down. I thought, if I get down the right-hand side of the lorry, that is next to, like, the road's only an hour road. I'll stick you out and show you where it happened. It's only an hour road, like, and the far ditch, like, two lorries with hardly more than pass on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I run down, and my idea was to get around the back of the lorry so as to have a wee bit of cover, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And as I was going down, I thought I had no foot left, because whatever, that foot there is still numb to this day. The one bullet caused that much damage to that foot. But whenever I go down around the back of the lorry then, I got in, it was a neighbour's yard, went in, down a bit further down the lorry, so he had wee walls built on every side, pillars, you know. So I thought the best place, I got down, I got in behind the wall to study myself. And once I got in behind the wall, I lay down there, or juked down anyway there, and then I said to myself, now, I better get out of here, because my army training was that the quicker you got out of the killing zone, yeah, that's the way we were trained. The quicker you know, to survive, you had to get out of the killing zone as quickly as possible.
And did you know where they were at this stage?
I knew where the bullets were coming from at the start.
Yeah.
But I was behind the lorry. I hadn't a clue whether they were coming after me,
yeah,
or what they were doing. But the thing was then that I got on round then behind the wall, thinking. But I suppose I've had to wait to try and lift the gun again. I'd probably been dead, because I had to get out of there as quick as I could.
Yeah.
So I just left the gun on the road, because it's no good to be in. But at least I've had time. I could have brought it with me, maybe got it cleared, you know, got it cleared. But like I was at this stage, as an IRA woman in Dromore told me one day, I was down in Dromore afterwards. She says, the adrenaline must have been quite high in you, she says, to get away from our boys. And I says, well, tell your husband, say, the next time, don't send Cubs to do a job, say, send Pat himself, says I, because he was a leading IRA man.
Oh, so that they, but you escaped, you got away.
I got away, across fields. I didn't know where I was going. I ploughed through ditches, through rivers, and I got away, and I could see just on the horizon, like the shadow of a farm on the right, but I didn't really, it wasn't far from me, but I was going to go then, knock the door there, and then my mind was telling me, now that lane goes from my road across onto another road. Now, I thought to myself, well, now this has been an excellent place to take over a house to ambush me, because what way they got the two ways of getting away, because the lane was through from one road to the other. So I didn't knock the door, so I was afraid never knocked the door, that whenever I knocked the door that maybe a gunman would have the house taken over, two of them. And I said to myself, now there's no point now, and if I've got away now knocking the door, another two gunmen coming out and finish me off. So I noticed the car sitting in the yard, so I went down to the car and I just got into it, and the keys were in it. And then I just held the door open a wee bit like that I could listen. And then I tried to start the car, and I thought she was never going to start. You know, it seemed like 15 minutes. But, I thought she was a diesel car, because, you know, they'd grind a wee bit. But it was actually turned out to be a petrol car. But I thought it was taking an awful lot of time. But then I couldn't find where to switch the lights on. But I got the wee thing, you know, where you flash the lights if you're meeting somebody. And I just flashed the lights a few times and driven, and sort of the darkness, I kind of knew where I was going. and made it back to here. I went through that
door
there, and the fellas going, my sister was sitting there, and as soon as I came through the door, he shouted, he thought I was still down, he seen the lorry going in earlier on, he thought I was still down in the gantry loading, and he roared, I said my mother was sitting there, so I get up, quickly let me through, I want to get the phone, and at that stage I hadn't even mentioned it being shot, but as soon as I passed the fella there was going, my sister, he shouted, "We have to get the back door closed." The men after him, because I seen the boiler suit on my back of my thing was in shreds, you know. So then I went to the phone and I phoned for the 999. I asked the ambulance and police, and I said, "Get here quick, for I'm dying. I'm riddled."
Yeah.
And then I got that done, and then next thing there was. Sometime afterwards, then I seen the ambulance going up past. I was still lying there and kind of looking, peeping through the door there, like in case, you know, I didn't know what was going on.
But you were still conscious.
And then I seen the ambulance going up past, the flashers on it, and her roaring, the siren roaring on her. And I knew then that they were going to go up to the middle of the town, turn out. They must have thought that I was still out where the shooting happened. I said to my sister, that her boyfriend was sitting there, I said, "Betty, go let hell up the town, get to the corner up there and get them stopped before they go out to Kinnock, because I'll be dead if they don't soon get here."
Yeah.
And she run, the ambulance wasn't sure where they were going, but they went to the top of the town, turned, come down again to try and get out my road, but that I got them stopped in time
and
stepped down here.
Yeah.
And then they done a lot of forced aid on me here. They cut the boiler suit off me and cut my short and vest and everything, you know what I mean? And so
the recovery rate after that, did you recover quickly or were you laid up for a long time?
Well, I was laid up for a long time, but I remember when they were carrying me into Enniskillen Hospital that there's a CAD man there, and while they were carrying me in, he was trying to get details of me, you know.
Yeah.
And I said to him, "Say, you know what you lose, if you don't catch them boys, say, I don't know what's going to happen, because say, that's the first new lorry ever I owned, so they've driven scrap for years, so I've bought a new lorry, and say, only I have it a lot of months, and say, you'll have to get them, because say, my lorry's wrecked." And say, then they took me into the hospital and done the whole fixing up on me.
Yeah.
And then the army padre come from the regular army padre come from Lisnelli barracks, and was adjacent to St. Lucia barracks where we were based, and he come, and he would have knew me, because he would have been a minister in Aileen's church before he went off to be an army padre, so he was there, you know. It seemed like no time at all, but then he wanted me transferred to the military wing in Musgrave Park in Belfast, and the doctors and things in Enniskillen, they wanted me to be kept in Enniskillen, but the threat was too high to be kept there, and they were kind of debating on it, and I says, "Well, tell me this, what day is the day?
And it's extraordinary how you're still, you know, how you survived all that. But Eileen, can you tell me, when this was going on at that time, I mean, what was going through your head? I mean, what were you thinking?
Well, first of all, the day it happened, I was at a church auction, and it was actually Daffodil Day, I remember that. And then Jonathan was to go out with his dad, and all of a sudden he changed his mind. And we never knew for years and years after, but he told us afterwards that he had heard a bell ring and he decided he wouldn't go. So
otherwise he would have been
in the lorry
with you.
Yes. Yeah.
Then the two years been dead, because I'd cover him up, you know.
Yeah.
But it was definitely divine intervention that the child wasn't with him. And as I say, that he wasn't shot dead, I mean, it's a complete miracle. And it's only by the grace of God that he is here. and as I say, prayers of. I would belong to prayer groups, and it's just by the grace of God that he is, that Joe is here, and that he's survived the horrendous ordeal. But when I was in our home, and had a gardener fella there doing some gardening, and he had come in, and he went to fell asleep in the chair after been working, and this was at about 9 o'clock at night. It actually happened about 9:10, and I heard. I thought it seemed like stones being thrown on a tin roof, and I looked out, and then it suddenly dawned on me. Joe's lorry's parked at the gate. This just isn't what I thought it was. And then I got really scared. So I ran out the door and I went down. We have a very short avenue, and down that a little bit. And I decided I couldn't go any further. I'd come back and look for the fella who had fallen asleep in the chair.
You placed that stage?
No, I don't know what I'd done. Maybe I did. But I came back and got him, and he came down with me. And as we went down to the road, we discovered that his paperwork for his business was lying all around the place. And I got really scared because I thought he had been abducted. And that frightened me. So I phoned my family, who lives towards the border, and told them to watch out. So came back into the house, and then a few friends arrived, for they had got to hear about it. And I was then obviously in a state of shock, and I just sat there in the chair, and they had to tell me, you know, that I needed to go to the hospital, and we needed to get our son away to family members and take him away. And then the police came in and sort of took over our home for a few days, and I went to stay with friends. And then on the Monday morning, because I had already been in the business, I knew a little enough about it to be able to carry on from the Monday morning on. But one person said to me, "How's your son coping with it?" I said, I remember well, the man was filling tractor diesel. And I remember well saying to him, I told him that it doesn't matter if there's how big a gunman is, that there's somebody bigger than that, you know, and that protected Dad. And he just never spoke. But people were trying to interview as well, talk to his dad and ask him questions about how badly he was injured and all. But as I say, it's a complete miracle.
But you'd already, Shale, we dealt with Shale a lot at the time.
Yeah.
Shale now pulled out of Ireland altogether. But Eileen, believe it or not, the year in Shale were a really good year, over the top of Shale in Belfast. Yeah. And she got a lorry sent down to Eileen's back. Eileen had the whole thing back on the road on Monday morning.
At 9 o'clock.
At 9 o'clock on Monday morning.
I got phone calls in total disbelief that we were open. And we got in a temporary. Yeah.
My lorry was wrecked, like.
Of course, but I mean, your life was saved.
Yes.
You were fine.
He was spared.
That's
yes.
Right.
But did it take an effect, Joe? I mean, did you suffer the consequences?
Well,
what happened?
I don't know whether I told you this or not, but whenever they're arguing about the thing in the hospital, about whether staying in a scanner or go to Musgrave Park or whatever, the padre obviously thought I'd be better off in the military barracks, you know. So, and I says, what day of the week is, and the time it was Saturday. Well, I says, I tell you what, doesn't matter where I'm, because I left me out of here by Wednesday, because I've customers be waiting in a while, they'll be build up of orders, and so there's nobody else to do them, and so I left it, just put me wherever you like, but I'm going out to Belfast, I'll crawl the motorway.
Because how could you possibly get back to work so quickly?
Well, I didn't get back to work because I took me to Musgrave Park and stayed to the theatre for operations, and then I must have 5 or 6 different operations during the time I was there.
Yeah.
But I was there for, I don't know, months, and then whenever I got home again, it never really took effect whenever I was in the hospital, because boys used to be seen to be in the hospital. Other boys were in injured as well, you know. They'd say, how are you laughing and carrying on and all the rest after what happened to you? And some of them had only minor injuries. One fella had a broken leg because he had a car smash, and he was actually a regular army soldier, and he was next to my bed after the movement. I was in my own room first, but never got a bit better to move me around. And he says, you're sitting there, and he says, you know, you have a corner shop, he says, because there are many people in and out to see me that that much stuff I was sending around the world, you know what I mean, the nurses to get rid of it, for I couldn't move.
So tell me now, the recovery period, it took you a while before you could actually get back here
whenever I eventually got back, I couldn't move, you know. I was on crutches and I wasn't able to move hardly, but I wanted to get back. I told them they wouldn't let me out, you know, I was going to break out. I wanted to get home, but I remember whenever I was home, like I was just lying on a couch in the flat there in the house, you know, and there come two boys in to me one day and they said to me that, you know, we'll have to change your identity and send you to England, and we'll give you £1 million if you move. And I says, no, there's only one way, I'm moving out of here, feet forced out to Kilskerry graveyard. And they said, oh, you're mad, you know, they're not finished with you yet, you know, they hit making a cock-up, you know what I mean. So I says, it doesn't matter, I'll be here. So all you boys are interested in, case you have to spend money yard, me, says I, and that's about the height of it, but say, I don't need no yard. So then they talked about putting bulletproof windows in, but I just done the house up and put new windows in it. I says, well, she didn't shoot me in the house, it was outside, sure, bulletproof. Do you want to put a bulletproof vest around me or wrap me up? Or, like, you know, that was the theory.
But did they try, I mean, afterwards, you said you went down to Drummond one day and this woman met you and she said you must have been flowing with adrenaline to...
Yes.
I mean, so here, you obviously knew who they were, the men that attacked you.
Well, I don't really know for sure, but I have a good idea, like, who they are, but I couldn't guarantee that. The rest, fair enough, the police did arrest two or three boys, four boys maybe, and took them in, like, but they were trimming, the police told me they were trimming on the way up the road till that time it was Castlereagh holding centre, and then whenever they got there they just sit and laughed at them and no comment. But what could they do, or what could I do, or anybody else? Yeah. I still meet them, you know what I mean? But I passed.
So nobody was ever held accountable for what happened?
No, I never bothered my head about them. All I was interested in was community relations, get me back, business back on foot, and fair enough to the community. I got more new customers because I come back here and went out to the man's house that I stole the car off, the first man I went to, whenever I got home, and apologised to him for stealing his car and all the rest. But he says, Joe, if it, in fact, actually he's a different persuasion to me as well. And he says, fair enough, Joe, he says, it would save your life. He says, I wouldn't care whether the car was in pieces or not, it wouldn't make a bit of difference.
Okay.
He says, I wouldn't have been asking you about the car.
So, I mean, it is a mixed community here in Trillick.
Yes. Oh, aye.
But tell me, when, peace negotiations started and, you know, they were talking about the Good Friday Agreement and when it all happened and they released all the prisoners who were arrested, I mean, did that upset you to see all the prisoners back out on the road again?
It didn't really, because actually one of the fellows that would have been behind my thing, he was killed in a road smash, so I said, look, the man above's not gonna, you know what I mean, the man above's there, he should still have been in jail, only got 50% remission, but I said, if he had to be still in jail, he'd be still alive, because he got out half time, instead of 15 years ago, 7.5. So, he wasn't involved, he possibly wasn't involved, but he was involved in the bomb, one of the boys I caught at the bomb,
I see,
I said to myself, you know, what orders make, because, you know,
you only go when your time comes.
You only go when you know what
I mean. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a very good example of it, is that you should have been dead that night after the spray of bullets just smothered the...
Well, they met me, and then I went to another man's house one day, and he would be a very high-up Republican, but he was getting oil of me, just, you know, during the whole troubles, he bought all his oil of me. But I reckon it was, you know, I'd think he'd missed the nice, you know what I mean, all the time. But I remember going to his house for a while, whenever it took me about 2 years, 2.5 years before I was able to get back in the lorry again. I suffered from post-traumatic stress and everything else. But it never kicked in until I got home. Because I never got home then. I was lying at the window all night with a gun. And as I said before, one weekend over Eileen and John was away, they come a car in and out the avenue several times. And at the rear, I went to the edge of the lane out side where I was shot. I lay in the ditch, and the next thing pulled up was the fire engine at 4 o'clock in the morning. And
You mean this is after the shooting?
Yes,
they were still after you.
Yes, but the fire brigade landed anyway. But and I knew the fella in the fire brigade, the head man over. But I turned around, and I just jumped out of the thing, and I said, right, I'm going to blast the whole bloody lot of you. So, is there anybody in this fire brigade has been hijacked, or what's happened? What are you doing here? We're here, your house on fire. Well, it doesn't look as if it's on fire. 4 o'clock in the morning. So I can see no fire. I thought, you know, that they'd hijacked, they'd phoned in that there was a fire, and maybe someone then got the fire engine. Or see, mine was doing overtime all the time.
Aye, of course it would be. I mean, can you imagine? You'd be on alert all the time, you know, that you were... Yeah.
Well, even then, whenever I did get, was able to drive again, I went back to the UDR again after about 2.5, 3 years, I went back to the UDR again, because I wanted to let them see that, you know, they hadn't achieved what they set out to achieve. Just to let them in. Then I bought while I was in the hospital, I ordered a brand new lorry as well, and I used to drive round past some of the boys' houses that I suspected, just drive past them with a brand new lorry, you know, round, and no orders on that road at all. Every chance I got, always made sure I passed them with a new lorry, like, and that was just to show them, like, I was teasing them in a sense. It was just to show them that they achieved nothing, only wasted their time, and...
Yeah,
that's the way the thing went on. But I got that times that I got that bad with the post-traumatic stress. Whenever I go out the road to go home, even after 3 years, there's times I couldn't even turn the car on my own avenue. I used to put the toe down and go on like hell past the house, and then I'd go on round the lock of the roads, and I'd drive round the roads at night and sit on tops of hills and things like that, to view if there's anything on about my house, you know, trying to, and then maybe Sixth Sense or something, I had a feeling that there was something wrong, I'd back up a lane somewhere and sleep in the yard in the morning.
Would you?
I would, yeah, I'd done that several times, because I don't know, it was just times I was brave enough, but just to hit me a bit.
But the extra, and Eileen, living with this, I mean, was this a nightmare for you? Was this... Were you living a nightmare?
It wasn't very easy now, but, you know, it was quite difficult, of course. And as I say, what can you do? I had a lot of people praying for me and the family. So, I mean, all you can do is trust that all will work out and that...
It seems to me you just wanted to get on with your job. You wanted to do your work.
I built up this business along with my father, and as I say, my father often disapproved, because I was trying to, you know, he was an hour away going, he was happy enough. If he went to the house with oil, I used to sit in the lorry whenever it was small, and I'd say, I count to 100 now, if he doesn't soon come out, I'm going to walk on, go on.
Yeah, of course, and I understand that. But you're, how do you feel now? at this point?
Well, it still hits me. That's times, especially afterwards, whenever the shooting was still going on, every time there was a shooting anywhere, you know, it just brought it all back to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And still nowadays, if you tell of anything happening like that, you know, it still, you know, it affects you.
Have you spoken to many people about your, about what happened?
Well, I hadn't to speak to anybody because the whole country knows it. Like,
oh, I know, but did you speak to anyone like me? Did you ever speak to
a
historian or a journalist?
I didn't speak to no journalists, or I have no time for them, because all they do is write down what sells the papers. But I've read a story in a book, Victims or something, I forget the name of the book. I read a wee bit of a story and hit, you know, but the one I told them, the one I picked out wee snippets of the story, you know what I mean, they picked out what suited them, so yeah. I realised that, you know, it's a waste of time.
So what I'm recording now is your full story, exactly what happened, everything that happened that night.
Everything happened that night was just, you know, I know, it just seemed like a nightmare or a...
Yeah, you just relive the whole thing there, from start to finish.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's just extraordinary.
But, you know, there's times now that I feel all right, and there's other times you don't feel all right. And
yeah.
The times I go to bed maybe for 2 or 3 days,
yeah,
you know, even yet, because I don't feel well, you know, I don't... And one injury in my shoulder there, like that, I had a skin graft on it. Like, yeah. You could put your fist into the hole because it must have hit the door of the lorry coming through, and it was like a cannonball rather than a bullet hitting me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A big hole just that shoulder. And then the hardest part was taking the skin of the back of my leg. That was a very sore thing. But the way the whole thing went is that I'm back and I'm...
You're living.
Living, and I'm doing well. You know, I'm doing well because...
And you're the people that shot you, and you know, the people... Do you blame all the Southerners? Or do you see Ireland as you know, the South, and these people who attacked...
No, I'll tell you...
The people who attacked you, who do you think they were?
Well, they're nothing... Only the scum of the earth, because the thing is, I've more customers from a different persuasion doing business. I've 80% of the Catholic community buys their oil of me, and they know that I'm honest and straight, and it doesn't matter what they do or anything else, I'm there. Like, I had a young girl not far away, and her husband was showed me a bill, and her husband was coming home from work, and he took a heart attack and died, and I went to the wake and went to the funeral. I'd be in the chapel there, regular at funerals, wakes, everything else, and I studied about the thing, and I just tell you, you know, that girl is 3 or 4 of a young family, and so she lost her husband.
Yeah.
And I'd went to bring home from the hospital till the house, and then I went to the wake, and then I went to the funeral. And after I came home from the funeral that evening, I said, I live for a couple of days, but I must write a receipt. So it's 500 and something pound. So I just wrote a receipt for her, and I landed out the door, knocked the door, and she says, sure, you're not back looking for money, you know what's after happening to me. I said, oh, there's a receipt for it. I said, I've paid it, it's marked paid. So you have enough trouble without me hunting you down.
Yeah.
I says, that's the way to get on with people.
Yeah.
I have a good way of getting on with people, because I treat everybody just as I meet them. But you were saying there, do I treat the South like the North? There's a lot of decent people. Nearly, I'd say, a lot of real decent people down in the South of Ireland. You've no problem with them. Like, once you get out of the border region and get the length of anywhere you want to go down the south, nobody bothers. I have no problem going south. I never had during the whole troubles or anything else. We used to go to Rosnaila on a Sunday.
Yeah.
We'd buy on a toddler, make sandcastles, buy him bucket and spade and everything else, you know what I mean? So we never no problem that way. Nor it's only wee pockets here and there. And I'd say about half a percent of the people in Northern Ireland, or even in the whole Ireland, but 0.5% the people that was messed up in this, and just messed everybody else's lives up, but they didn't mess mine up, because the people belonged to their community. They were too feared to speak out, or too feared to do anything, because they threatened some of my customers not to buy oil of me, to boycott me. But they didn't, they bought away, and that is it. But I stuck by them. I make sure they get treated properly before for sticking with me.
Well, I must say, it's an incredible story. It's one of the most incredible stories I've ever actually recorded, because to sit down and talk to a man who should be dead, you know, it's just extraordinary.
Well, you should be dead any time. That's one thing I've always joked about.
Yeah.
I was at a funeral there one day, and I bought a new BMW, not a new BMW, but a new to me, but she was a manager's car. She was, you know, she was yellow. I love yellow because Shell's colours are always yellow.
Yeah.
So that threw me to, yellow's just my colour. But you see that yellow car right there? There's another one sitting over there in the son's house. But and I bought the car and it parked anyway, and it's down in Strabane actually. The funeral was, and I parked anyway, but I shook hands. I had to go back to Sion Mills then for the teas to meet the relatives, you know. And the undertaker and the fella helping him, they drove out of the park, you know, and I was just standing beside the car. And he says to me, "Boys, that's some car there. What horsepower is that?" So I don't have a clue, says I, for it. I never even driven it. I bought it for a Shella. And
Fantastic,
he said to me then, he says, "You know," he says, "I'd love to have a drive in that."
Yeah.
And I said back to him just as quick as light, I says, "I'm dying to have a ride in the back of that." You know, so, but that's the way it is.
And that's lovely. But no, thank you for telling me your story. Tell me your family, the Mills, are they all rooted in this area? Or where did your grandfather come from?
My grandfather, my mother's side, she was from Castledarg.
Yeah.
And my father's side were somewhere down around the Ramore direction.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere down there. I never got to trace them up, but my granny, my father's mother always lived with us. My father's mother, she used to wee sweetie shop up where my father was fixing the biscuits up the street.
So you're very rooted then in this.
Well, we're here. I don't know how long we're here. I was born in Tralee.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
why he was so stubborn and he wouldn't move to, down to.
No, well, I don't know, but I wouldn't. You know, if I went away, if you paid for a holiday, give me a holiday at £25,000 to go to America or somewhere like that, I wouldn't be there 2 days or three days would do me. I'd be wanting home again. That's the kind of me. Like, home's home.
It's the centre of the universe.
I see.
No, so
I'm not exactly in agreement.
So does everybody else. Like everybody else, you know, nobody really moves from far away out of this community.
So I can see how it could affect you, that if somebody intimidated you or asked you to leave, or, you know, asked you to pack up and go with your business.
No way I would go.
Yeah.
I'd be here to whatever day.
No, we have a lot of good friends, so.
Yeah.
No, we have good friends. Yes.
Well, Eileen and Joe Mills, thank you so much. I mean, I appreciate you taking me into your house and telling me your stories.
I'm on that canopy, you know what I mean?
Okay, Joe, you've just driven me down here to your own house and on this narrow white road.
Yes.
And so tell me, this is where you pulled in here
just,
now.
Just exactly where I was sitting with the lorry here, exactly.
And where exactly were the men that were firing at you?
The first man fired at me there was just at that. The gate was closed. He probably used the gate as a. He was firing just straight from the gate, like straight at me, you know what I mean? Through this side. And then whenever
that's the driver's side here.
And then as I dived, the bullet I turned around like that to lift the stake, and just bang, past me.
When you say the stake, it was you say you got two stakes to eat that evening.
I would one of them for me and one of them for Aileen if she wanted to. But I didn't get back in time, and then I just thought, now it was Saturday night, so what I'd done was I'd come back this way, left it in, went on, done my delivery, come back this way, parked the lorry here, walked in, walked back out again. So only they were too greedy. They would have had me no bother because they could hit me over the... If they'd have waited to lock a minute, stagger out of the lorry, I was going to get out and walk actually around there. Well, they had a great chance, only they were too greedy. They're too quick to try. They couldn't wait to get me killed because obviously, you know, then if that had been a while later, they'd have got me coming back, parking the lorry there, go in, all they had to do was sit there and just pump me. Like, there were several times, there was three chances they missed at killing me. And as I say, then later on that night, I would have been coming out on a pickup. And if the same amount of stuff was, I reckon that, well, the order that I got that I was going to was out of oil. They hadn't ordered oil at all. So I reckon they'd be set up here and set up at the house I was going to. Yeah. But they didn't got me first. If they hadn't got me here, they'd have got me at the other house. So, because whenever the police checked out, the other house hadn't ordered oil. But it was a false thing. So they're hell-bent in getting me that night, one way or the other, you know what I mean?
So what time in the morning was it when you pulled in here? Or what time in the day?
Oh, it was 9:10 on a Saturday night. But it was just as on the 23rd of March, 1991, and I'd pulled in here, and it wasn't really dark, but it was, you know, you just wouldn't have seen a pile of there, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I put my hand up, bang on the wee button there, lit up the whole cab, went through that, and the thing would pass me, and then I dived, and just automatically without thinking I dived. And then the boy opened it. He must have thought he hit me, ticked me with a one bullet first. Yeah. He had a good aim from there, like he was just sitting, me lit up. He probably thought one will do it, then maybe the intention of taking away and torturing me or something. But then he fired a burst then. I had just right up the back, right over there, feet up there. Then pushed that door open, thinking... Now, the way I was lying, you can imagine, all I had to do was push the door open, do a cartwheel, and it landed out there.
Yeah.
And then I could run down the side of the lorry. I wouldn't run towards the house because I didn't want to go near the house, because if I had went near the house, actually, I'd have been attracting them to shoot Jonathan and Eileen as well.
Ah, your family.
So my first thought was, get the hell, lead them away from danger, you know what I mean?
And was there somebody else standing out there on the left-hand side, the passenger side?
No, he was behind that tree in front of you there.
Yeah.
Little tight seat there.
Yeah. I can see it, yeah.
See, you can see the lorry there. There was the lorry after the shooting.
Yeah.
There's a party, see, sure. That boy was more or less
just behind that tree,
just behind. There's the tree sitting there. There's the lorry. The lorry's exactly where I am. There's the gate, actually. The lorry but there's the gate lying there.
And so the bullets came from this side as well, did they?
Once I dived, the other boy he missed my head, got me right up the back, blew me over. It was just like a whirlwind, blew me over in there. I landed on my back, my feet up. And I thought, this is great, now I push the door open. As soon as I went to push that door open, you'd see where he fired that whole side there. He even broke the mirror, and you see the glass in the seat there.
Yeah.
And you can see everything. And then that's the driving side there. That's the boy coming down the middle of the road. He was firing.
He was the third guy coming down the main road here.
Down that road out of that back lane into my house.
Yeah.
And you can see there now where the bullets is there, like.
And so all the glass here in the front was...
That's all. You can see it there, like. See, see all the holes there, look, see.
Yeah.
And then I'll show you.
And what kind of a night was it? Was it wet like this, or was it dry?
No, it was a dry night. Dry, yeah. But you can see there now where that door, that is it, probably taken the next day. Yeah. See all the holes in the door there, look, see?
Yeah.
That's whenever he drilled her.
Yeah.
There, see all the wee holes there? And you can see the bits of glass all round her there?
Yeah.
And then there's we're sitting again. That's the neighbour's farm over there where I run behind the yet.
Well, that's
that was John at the time there.
And he was only 9.
That's right. There's Ian.
Yeah.
And there now, there's the door whenever, after he fired all these shots at me, but yeah. He riddled underneath that seat there, Tara. You see now, right round them holes coming through the door there.
So the only bullet that entered your body was your leg?
Oh, no, no, my back. My back, entered my back, and they just missed my spine. And then that hit there.
It went up your back. It didn't penetrate your back.
Well, it did. It took lumps out of my back. You know what I mean? But it didn't. See, there again. There again. Mm. Now, you see where they went out? You see where the bullets went out through the back of the cab?
Yes.
That's the back of the cab. You see every one of them? See any wee pit hole in the seat there?
Yeah.
Them was bullets there that either come through whenever the door was open or whatever. But there's my tachographs. Them would have been sitting in the front of the lorry there.
Yeah.
Them's all bullet holes go out through the back of the lorry.
Yeah.
There you are again with the whole windscreen. You can see everything's just shattered. That one is blue clean out altogether.
Yeah.
It's not there. And
so would you be worried for your son now, who's running the business? And do you think if there was trouble again, would you worry that trouble would break out again?
That's what I've ordered the tanks.
It's amazing. Amazing. Well, I appreciate you bringing me out here very much to show me this.
Oh, that's about the hill there.
Yeah.
But you can see just, you know, yeah. But there's more trees in this area. Some of them blew down in storms since that, you know.
Yeah.
But
No, it's coming out and seeing it, you get the real
feeling. Well, that's, you know, you really know, like, that the other option I had was probably when the back entrance, but I was going to foot about the lorry there. Like I moved like a flash of lightning all the time, because but matter where I was, I never walked or run, because I was always too busy to. I wouldn't take time. People would ask me in for tea, you know, and I wouldn't actually
hang around. You just go.
No, I'd say no. I'm having time for tea. I have to go on. But my father's day. He went in and sat in every house for tea. But there was no hurry on people them times.
No, you see, things moved a lot slower. Yeah.
Slower. I was moving. Where do you put that in the tank?
But do you think now that Jonathan, your son, is running the business, would you be concerned or worried that if it should come back again, you know, that...
No,
is there ever that fear? Does that ever enter your mind at all?
No, I think there's a different generation now. I even notice young people now, whenever John was going to school, like, threatened him going to school, like, and beat him up and everything else, going to school, meeting other children coming. I even had children throw stones at the lorry whenever they're driving past, you know, whenever they're coming to school, around the different villages round about. But, I think... the whole thing's over.